Okay, good morning, everyone. Chodesh Tov. Good Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh Shvat. In Fairlawn today, it feels like Shvat. The trees are blooming. It's so warm outside and beautiful. Just kidding. But nonetheless, beautiful chakras this morning. It's very, very exciting. Okay, we're getting warmth just by seeing the Floridians on Zoom. Good morning. Okay, we're in the middle of the 14th chapter of Sefer Shoftim, really right in the middle of the story of Shimshon, the very challenging, surprising, shocking stories and narratives of Shimshon HaGibor. What we learned last week is that Shimshon grows up, he's getting older, and he sees an attractive woman from the Benos Plishtim, a woman from Timnah, from one of the cities of the Plishtim. And he tells his parents, "You're not going to believe it. I saw a beautiful woman today, and I want to marry her." We can only imagine the surprise and the ire of his parents. After all, like, he was miraculously conceived. You know, a malach came to him. A malach came to his parents and said, "This is the, you know, your child is going to be a child of God. Very holy man." And the first time he goes out, he wants to and is demanding that he marries a young woman from the Plishtim, a non-Jew, Shiksa. It's like a crazy thing. And we discussed this last week. Was she not Jewish? How did he marry her? There are several different approaches. We discussed the Rambam. The Rambam writes that even though technically they were not allowed to be married, she couldn't convert for the sake of marriage. Ultimately, if she did, and she performed the Kabbalas Ol Mitzvos, she accepted upon herself all the mitzvos, then she is considered Jewish 100%. And we'll see maybe sources back and forth to that address this point. So we will pick it up with Pasuk Dalet. So the parents here don't want him to marry this woman for obvious reasons. And Shimshon is very insistent that this is the woman for him. Pasuk Dalet tells us, "Vaviv ve'imo lo yadu ki me Hashem hi." His parents didn't know that this is from Hashem. And what does that mean? This is from Hashem. This is part of the plan that she's going to convert. The Plishtim are going to get angry. They're not going to know what side he's on. Is he a Plishti guy? Is he a Jewish leader? It's not clear. Ki to'enahu mevakesh mi Plishtim. At this moment, Plishtim Moshim Bi'Yisrael, the Plishtim are ruling over, subjugating the Jewish people. It's a very murky story. One issue that does come up over here that is addressed by the Poskim as a side point, but it does come up over here, is the notion of Kibud Av V'Em vis-a-vis who you want to marry. So if somebody comes home with a nice young woman, with a nice young man, and the parents are, let's leave out non-Jew from this situation as is here, and the parents are not so into this. So we want everybody to be on the same page. We want there to be shalom bias amongst the family. But when push comes to shove, if a child says, "I want to marry this, you know, this person," and his parents say no, what's the halakha? Is that part of Kibud Av V'Em? Is there a mitzvah to say, "I must listen to my parents"? The parents say, "You should not marry this young woman, this young man." And she says, and he says, I disagree. You don't know me. You don't really know her. You don't get it. She's really amazing. You're not really seeing the right side of her. Nobody will ever be good for you, you know, good for you, for me." So the halacha is pretty clear that there, when it comes to choosing a wife, that is not something that is part under the purview of Kibud Av V'Em. Of course, children should listen to their parents and take their advice, but that's not part of the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em in general. So now Shimshon and his parents. Now, like, focus on this. Vayirid Shimshon v'aviv imo timnasa. Now, Shimshon, party of three, and his two parents go to Timna. Vayavo'u ad karmei timnasa. They get to the vineyards of Timnasa. Vihine kfir arayot shoeg likraso. So this pasuk is like, you know, follow the bouncing ball. So Shimshon, his mother and father go to Timna. They get to the vineyards of Timna. Vihine, and all of a sudden, there is a fully grown lion. Shoeg likraso. Likraso is incorrect here. It should really read shoeg likrasam. If Shimshon is with his parents at this moment, as the beginning of the pasuk says, it should be, the pasuk should read that everybody is shoeg likrasam. So the Chazal read here and understand, just based on the simple understanding of the pasuk, is that Shimshon was not with his parents at this moment. Somehow, some way, he veered off the side of the road, and he was alone. It's very clear. Mitzudas David points this out. Likraso biyos levado. He was alone at this moment when a lion approaches him. Right, the Radak says ulai hu holech mederech lefnei avivimo merachok v'kfir balikraso v'avivimo lo ra'uhu. Yeah, maybe he was ahead of them. He was walking ahead of them. For some reason, you walk together, you're not always together. Maybe he was ahead of them, and they weren't really all together. So when a lion approaches you, you have to really be concerned for your life, and something very serious can happen. But titzlach alav ruach Hashem. So you see here for the first time, right, that the titzlach, we said that, I'm just going back, at the end of Parak Yud Gimel, we said v'tachal ruach Hashem lefa'amo, that sometimes the ruach Hashem is going to come upon him. So now you see the first time that a ruach Hashem is successful upon him. It's hard to understand what this means. The English is maybe more accurate. The Spirit of the Lord gripped him. Vayishisehu kishesah hagadi, and he ripped apart, he tore apart this lion like he'd be ripping apart a young animal, like it was nothing to him. Uma ein biyado. Velo higid laviv limo eis asher asa. So he does this with relative ease, and he doesn't tell his parents what he does. It gets done. And he doesn't tell his parents what he does, right? So we're going to see over and over again that Shimshon is going to be gripped by or overcome by this Ruach Hashem. And this Ruach Hashem is going to lead to him getting this unbelievable strength, right? Vishiseu means to break something literally in half. It's like ripping a piece of paper. And that's how easy it was for him and what he did. Vayered. Vayidaber la'isha, v'tishar be'enei Shimshon. Okay, so you see that he went down, he spoke to the woman, this woman that was attractive to him, and Shimshon was pleased with this woman. Now, before we get there, we're going to see more, I think, meaning and depth behind this, but the Rav David Valley, somebody asked what? Rav David Valley was a student of the Arizal. Somebody asked a question? Hello?
I have a question, Rabbi.
Go ahead, Nathan.
You mentioned a moment ago Tibet Ava Ein. So my question is, if a Jewish boy or girl wants to marry a non-Jew, is it appropriate for the parents to set Shiva?
Okay, you're asking a very important question. Is it appropriate? The point, I would say like this. What's the goal? What would be the goal of the kids, of the parents to sit shiva? What's their point? What is that accomplishing? Are they mourning the loss of the relationship? What are they doing? This was something that was done back in the day. This is something that was done hundreds of years ago where people would literally do this. They would sit shiva. Bizman hazeh, many poskim, or maybe all, do not agree with that. They feel doing that, ultimately one would sever the relationship with one's children, and it's not what you want. Maybe back then, the goal of that was to shock the children when even just talking about this, that they would never, you know, approach and consider to marry somebody that was, you know, out of the religion. And that created a deterrent within the culture of the communities. Bizman hazeh, that's not true. That's not, maybe for some communities it still is, but it's not, doesn't necessarily help both ways, beforehand and afterwards. So you need to think about what, if there is a deterrent, what would that be, you know? And after it happens, is that something healthy that one wants to do? Because ultimately one's declaring that one's severing the relationship with one's children. Is that something that someone would ever want to declare or renounce or do publicly by the show of an avelus? The Rabbanim that I speak to do not think that that is an appropriate approach these days. Okay, so Rav David Vali was a student of the Arizal, and he wrote a perush on Sefer Shoftim, and he writes there that why did he specifically see a kfir? There are different levels of lions. For those that go to Camp Lavi, a Lavi is a lion. So Lavi, in Camp Lavi, all the divisions are named after different stages of lions. There's, and one of them is a kfir. Kfir, I think, are kids or boys and girls going into sixth grade. So different levels of lines. Okay, so
Rabbi,
yeah, one second. So he writes like this: Kadesh Yavin, why kfir specifically? Bekash asid huliz gaber ala kofrim. Kfir has the same words as kofir, a denier of God, right? Someone that runs away or denies Torah and its validity. And maybe by Shimshon overcoming the actual kfir, it's symbolizing in the future that he's going to overcome the kofrim and he's going to get people to be believers in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yeah, Jules, go ahead.
Question number one, why is it important to know that he was going with his parents? And number two, they weren't even aware what was going on. I mean, it seems insignificant to let us know the fact that he happened to be walking with his parents and then he sees the line, yet they're not aware. They don't realize what their son was and who he is. It just doesn't seem to make sense.
Right. Well, it mattered to Shimshon. On one hand, it mattered to Shimshon that his parents are gone with him. That mattered to them, that they were part of this meet and greet with the Mishpacha. Okay? I think that's number one on one hand. On the other, they broke off at one point, and Shimshon did not necessarily share all of his power and all of his abilities with his parents.
But they had to be close enough. I mean, you're hearing the roar of a lion. They're not even in the vicinity.
Yeah, so it must be they went, I don't know, maybe it was late at night. They took a break. I mean, parents were sitting down. He went for a walk. I mean, I want to go look around for a few minutes. I'll be back in 10 minutes. And it was far enough away.
It was through a vineyard. They can go.
Rabbi.
Yeah.
So we have Mara Honey here who's saying that the reason that they separated because they were going through a vineyard.
And he
could not. So that's why they separated. Is that
he walked around and
they walked around it and they went through it.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Okay.
That's what I learned. Prospect Park High School.
Prospect Park High School. Wow.
Yeah.
That makes more sense.
Just a few years ago. That makes a lot of sense. Okay.
Thank you. A few years ago. I like that. Thank you.
So that fits very nicely with the Chazal. Chazal say that about a Nazir, you say schor schor. Amrina l'Nazira, you tell him to walk around the vineyard. So he told his parents, you go the shortcut, I'll go around. Okay, very nice. Even Jules is happy with that one. Okay.
Rabbi.
Excellent. Rabbi. Yeah.
I have a question.
Just kidding, Jules.
Why
yeah.
Why did it say that Shimshon tore the lion apart? Why can he just not defend himself? Just kill him. Why did I have to say that he tore him apart?
You'll see that Shimshon's is dramatic. Let's say like that. There's a drama to the way that he fights against the enemies. And this is highlighting how strong he is. He is unbelievably strong. That it wasn't like he just had one punch and knocked out the lion. And no. That's like normal strength. This is unbelievable strength. Like he could just, like that. I broke my pencil, right? Just in half. Shimshon could do that with a lion. It just shows in a very dramatic way how powerfully strong he was. Now, Vayered, this Pasuk Zayin, Vayered Vayedaber Le'isha Vatishar Be'enei Shimshon. So Vayedaber Le'isha literally means he spoke to the woman. But if you look at the Mefarshim here, is that they do not take that simple approach. Vayedaber Le'isha, so Malbim takes that approach. Atadiber ima liros im tiasher beinav. He speaks to her directly. Why does he speak to her? Mitzad shekal sichla umidoseha v'hodas ahavasa alav. He wants to know her intellect and her midos, and if they're compatible, right? So this is like a shidduch date. She wants to get to know him on three levels. Are they equally, or intellectually on the same level? Does she have good midos? And is she attractive? Good. Mitzudas David says they're very similar. They spoke to each other, just one to the other. Shimshon atzmo diber ima. Shimshon spoke to her alone. However, you have another group of Rishonim, the Radak and Rashi, who say differently, okay? Radak writes, Bavor ha'isha shitinu halo. O diber im ha'isha atzma shitinu halo. He spoke, Radak's first interpretation is that he spoke to somebody else on behalf of her. And Rashi says this literally, al ha'isha. He spoke about the woman. He didn't go to her. Before he met her, now think about how this plays out modern day. Before he met this woman, he spoke to other people about her. Diber lekroveha. He spoke to her relatives to find out about this woman.
Rabbi. So,
yes.
I'm having a whole hard time with this. I mean, learn the Torah when you go out to battle, right? And yeah. you see a woman and you're attracted to her, what the routine is and what you have to do to basically be able to have a relationship with her. So it infers from there that this is a certain situation where if you see someone that's attracted to you, only in this type of situation, but here he's attracted to someone who's not Jewish, he should walk away. It's one thing I could say, you go into Brooklyn College and you have someone there that you meet and you have a relationship as a friend and she's not Jewish. And then all of a sudden it grows on you. And then before you know it, there's something more to it. And then she wants to become Jewish. But here, this guy sees somebody on the street and he's attracted to her. And this is what he's going. It's somehow there's something failing here.
Mandy?
Sharon,
yes. Our pal. It sounds to me, if you're just reading the whole story, that it's an indication of what Shimshon's character was like. He was a person of extremes to me. In other words, he wasn't the kind of person who, I'll give it time, I'll think about it. No, he sees someone, I'm tremendously attracted to her. Oh, that's the one. He goes out and he sees a lion. He has the strength from Hashem. He rips it apart. He doesn't just, you know, defend himself. It, in all of the actions or behaviors that he has, it seems to be behaviors of extremes.
Yeah, that's a great point, Sharon, right? Everything that he does, you know, we're going to have to always understand Shimshon on many levels. We need to read the simple understanding, I mean, the push-up shot, which is not usually always so simple, but about what type of person he was, what his character. And then, you know, what we did last week was we went into Chazal and was this appropriate? Was this not appropriate? Hashem is involved here in him finding this woman and marrying this woman, right? We said his parents didn't know that this all came from Hashem. So somehow it sounds like something was permitted here. It's very murky. So I like, Sharon, I like what you're saying, that he was a man of extremes in terms of what everything he does. Like Milty, he doesn't just punch the lion or shoo it away, but he uses all of his might, all of his power. He sees that here too, and he acts upon this woman. So, and even here, the Mefarshim are, does he just go straight to the woman and say like, hello, let's get married? Or is he just, you know, looking around and trying to find out maybe is she the right one? And maybe that's at the tension here between the different Mefarshim. The Sefer Mishpat Zahav on Sefer Shoftim points out here that this maybe is one of the original proofs for a Shadchan. The fact that Rashi's saying he spoke to other people before speaking to her, that maybe this is the idea of where Shadchan comes from. He says the truth is the first Shadchan in the Torah is all the way in the beginning, Parshas Chayisara, when Eliezer puts together Rivka with Yitzchak. But ultimately, right, maybe that is what's going on over here too with what Rashi is saying, that that's part of this process over here. And they need to...
It's passionate to go to a shatkin for a shiksa.
For a shiksa. Okay. Inachanami. I hear you. No, 100%, you're 100% correct. We're trying to... We can learn from all the psukim, you know, something to our own lives also. Okay. Vayashav miyamim. Now, what happens? So, really, this is scene one, act one, that they met good. And guess what? They like each other. Wonderful. They don't get married right away. That's not what protocol is going to tell you should happen in society back then. What happens? He comes back a year later. Vayashav miyamim lekachta. And this maybe tells you that there was something kosher going on here. Like the Rambam saying that there was a gerus. There was a gerus. Maybe there was a process, perhaps. Additionally, you could argue that that's the way it was done back then with Kiddushin and Nisuin. Those two parts were broken up. Kiddushin was first, and then Nisuin a while later. That's what the Abarbanel writes here. Shebetzchila erases Isha. Initially, there was erusin. And then later, a year later, that's how it was, he comes back to finalize the marriage with the nisuin, right? And that is what happens. That's a normal thing. The Rabbal writes this also is what's going on. Vayasar vayasha miyamin lechachta. So he comes back a year later. Vayaser liros es mapelas ha'aryeh. He is walking, presumably, on the same path back from where he came last time. And he sees this carcass of the lion that was dead. Vihine adas devorim bigvias ha'aryeh udvash. Lo and behold, within the carcass, hope everyone's finished with breakfast. Within the carcass of the lion, there is a beehive, a swarm of bees, And within this swarm of bees is a whole thing of honey. Okay, so he's walking by this place. He sees again the beehive. Ah, it's here. Thank you, honey. It's the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon is the one that says that he walked around the Kerem, the vineyard. Okay, honey, that's thank you. That's where it comes from. So he goes around it, and he sees this, and he sees a whole thing of honey. Now, what does he do? So if I think all of us, any of us here, would see this swarm of honey, we would say, interesting, maybe gross. I can't believe the carcass is still there. I don't know what you would say, but I don't think any of us would do what Shimshon is going to do. Vayirdehu el kapav. He scoops up the honey in his hands. Vayelech haloch va'achol. And he goes and he eats the honey. Vayelech el aviv ve'elimo. Vayitein lahem vayochelu. And again, right, according to, right, they're walking through the vineyard. He's walking around it. He goes, you're never going to believe what I found for you. Here, fresh. Go eat a little bit. Here's some honey. Velohi gidlahem, and he didn't tell them, ki migvias ha'aryeh radah hadvash. He didn't tell them that he got this flavored honey from the inside of the carcass of a lion. Okay. I don't know. What do you think? What's the message here? What's this hinting to? So in Parshas Vayechi, one of the psukim regarding Shevet Dan is Dan Gur Aryeh Yizanek Min HaBashan. Let's just pull it up over here. Dan. Sorry. I'm wrong. Dan Gur Aryeh. This is from Zosa Bracha. Dan Gur Aryeh Yizanek Min HaBashan. And about Dan, what did Moshe say? Dan is a lion's whelp that leaps forth from the Bashan. Okay, now what in the world does this mean? What's interesting in general about this pasuk is that we usually say, which is the tribe that's compared to the lion? Which tribe? It's all over Yerushalayim.
Yehuda.
Yehuda, right? So the truth is there are two. There are two tribes that are compared to the lion. Dan is in Vayechi is compared to the Nachash Alay Derech. And in Zosa Bracha, he's compared to a lion. Yizanek Min HaBashan. So the Or Chaim HaKadoshir writes the following. Ulai Shniskavin El Shimshon. Maybe when Moshe is talking about the Gur Aryeh, he's referring to Shimshon, who comes from Dan. Sheshisa ha'ari kishisa hagvi, who broke apart the Aryeh like it was nothing. V'omer yizanek, v'tzlichas alav ruach Hashem, v'dilek l'shaso kibidalek harashan. So maybe this is like a reference to the greatness, the strength, the power of Shimshon in terms of what he did, right? And this power comes from the bracha of Moshe, and this is what is going on. Okay, so he takes this. And again, this shows maybe that he acts impetuously, that Shimshon acts based on his complete desire. And he doesn't really think too much into things. Vayered Avihu El Ha'isha. His father came down to the woman. Vayasham Shimshon Mishta. And Shimshon makes a party. Kikain Yaasu Habachurim. Right? So Avihu is a funny language. It should be Aviv, or it should be Aviv Imon. So here the Radak writes, why is it focusing on the father? Because maybe his father ran ahead and told this woman, his future daughter-in-law, to like, come, hurry up, get ready for the wedding. Like, so when Shimshon gets there, everything will be planned. So maybe he ran ahead to meet her. The other Mefarshim say, why is it Avihu, with this extra hey at the end? Nir Shabala Marki Aviv Ba Bishlichu So. That maybe the father was coming as a shliach of the son. And maybe this is teaching you that Sha'aviv Yarala Hachinas Mishta Nisuin, Shizu Haizachoba Shimshon. It's Shimshon's really, it's called a Sudas Chasim Vekala. And really, it's the Chasim's responsibility to make the Suda. But the Chasim didn't do it. And he asked his father to do it in his behalf. So maybe that's what's going on here. Maybe that's what's being taught here, that really the Chiyav or the obligation is not on the parents, but it's on the son. And the son asked the father to go ahead and take care of this. Vayikir osam oso, vayichu shloshim meireim, vayehiyu ito. When they saw him, they brought him 30 friends to be there with him. So one of the Mefarshim, right, that back in the day, we have now groomsmen, or we have, you at least have like one, you have the best man. So that concept of having friends of the chassan and kala to be there at the wedding comes from the Gemara. The Gemara talks about Shoshvinin, where they had people that helped them out, took care of them on the day of the wedding. Shimshon seemingly did not have anybody. He didn't bring any friends with him, which may speak about his nature. He was a loner. He did things on his own. And they went there. Like the Radak writes here, Vayikach Korach, Klomer Kol Echad Lakach Chavero. Everyone like took a friend with them to bring them to this wedding. Presumably they needed people. It was, sometimes once in a while you get that. Like, we need more people to come to the wedding. We don't have a lot of people here. And they didn't have people. So they brought people on behalf of Shimshon and this woman to be misameach them.
Rabbi. And,
yeah.
So by definition, would a nazir be somebody who is more like to themselves because... doesn't drink, he doesn't do certain things. I mean, doesn't have things in common maybe with other people.
It's maybe likely.
More of a loner. Yeah.
It's likely that that's part of this. We'll see, it's part of his MO. He doesn't act with, like the other leaders in Shoftim led the people. You know, Shimshon is going to be considered a Shofet. He's on the wall. Like when we have a, your fifth grade teacher had a wall of the list of the Shoftim and how many years they lasted for. Shimshon's on that wall. So Shimshon counts as the Shoftim. But he's fundamentally so different than every other Shoftim that we have. Every other Shoftim. Like, think of Devorah, leading the people into battle. Ehud acted on his own first, but that got everybody else involved. Even Gidon and the Yiftach flawed people, but they were acting amongst the people. Now, Shimshon is that extreme. He is a one-man wrecking ball. He's going to be doing everything on his own. He's a loner in that way. He definitely is. Is that by design? I don't know. We'll have to see. If that's like by design, or it's hard for him to connect to people, it's difficult to see, or maybe this was on purpose. Remember, one of the first we saw last week said, maybe this is on purpose, because when the Plishtim get angry at Shimshon, they're not going to take it out on the Jewish people. Because they're going to say Shimshon is a rogue guy. He's rogue. He married one of us. So who are we taking this out on? We're not going to take revenge on the Jewish people because he's not one of them. So no one could claim responsibility for him, which is sometimes a good thing or a bad thing, right? It's, you have spies, some of the CIA. So what do they say? If they get caught, they're a member of nobody. So they can't reveal that information. The CIA is not going, I don't know if this is really true, right? But we're not going to reveal whether he's a member of our unit or our agency, because that undermines everything. And that means the Americans are involved in whatever we're talking about. So Shimshon was a loner, and so stay here. We're going to stop here. We'll continue with what actually happens at this party soon. But the Mefarshim do say here that this was a Sheva Brachos, that this party was a Sheva Brachos that Shimshon did on behalf, that Shimshon had on behalf with his wife for their wedding. That this was one of the Makoros for Sheva Brachos. They include people from the community to come to the party and come here. And you can ask yourself, who are these people? They're not, probably not Jewish. You're right, but we do learn some idea, some concept here of Sheva Brachos. And next week, we will continue, in which we will learn the first of Shimshon's famous riddles that will come up from this story.
Rabbi.
Yes.
So we know a little bit about Shimshon. Do we find out eventually?